Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now, let's get on with the show.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast. Today, I'm doing a special episode. Well, special to me anyway. 9 years ago, this week, on the 22nd of August, 2010, my brother, Sergeant Stephen DeLuzio, was killed in action in Afghanistan. And I wanted to make sure that this episode, landing on this particular week, was dedicated to him and his service. Now, a few weeks ago, I had Chris Weir on, who also lost his brother in combat. One of the things Chris said was that he wanted to make sure his brother's memory continued to live on, even though he was gone. I couldn't agree with that more. I feel like the more we do to keep the memory of these soldiers alive, the better it is. And so with this episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about my brother and how he impacted my life. So my brother, Stephen, was 3 years younger than me. Growing up, we always had that big brother, little brother complex. You know, we'd fight, but then we'd get right back to playing together. You know, we'd go back and forth with that throughout our lives. Even though I had the upper hand at home and usually won the fights that we got into, outside of home, we were together. We always had each other's backs. Steve played hockey in high school and eventually went on to play in college at Hofstra University. His high school hockey team actually won the state championships his senior year of high school. And then eventually he went on to play hockey at Hofstra University his freshman year in college. While he was there, he sort of fell into the wrong crowd, though, and started to not focus on school as much as he should have. His grades slipped, and I think he even ended up failing a couple of classes. Eventually, he realized that he was heading down a path he didn't really want to be going down. The late-night parties and drinking were replaced with studying that he should have been doing, and he realized that that wasn't where he wanted to be. He came home one day from college and said that he wanted to transfer to a military college. He didn't have any particular college in mind. Just knew that he wanted to go to a military college. The idea was that he'd get more discipline and focus there. Wouldn't be as prone to heading out to parties and doing all that other stuff. Eventually, this led him to transferring from Hofstra to Norwich University in Vermont. While he was there, he definitely got some discipline. His entire day was planned out for him, including early morning PT, class time was scheduled, study time was built into his schedule, meals, everything was built into the schedule. He just didn't have time for all the other partying that he had when he went to Hofstra. And not surprisingly, his grades improved while he was there. At some point while he was at Norwich, he had talked to an Army recruiter about joining the Army National Guard up in Vermont. A friend of his at Norwich was already in the Guard and told him all about it. And my brother ended up joining in a delayed entry program and went to basic training at Fort Benning, Georgia in the summer after that school year. While he was in basic training, the seed sort of had been planted in me about joining the Army. I knew I wanted to join the military as well. As a matter of fact, I kind of wanted to do that since I was a little kid. But I was in a bit of a different situation than he was. I already had graduated college and I had a full-time job at that point. And so it sort of scared me thinking that I might get fired if I asked for a few months off to go join the Army and go to basic training and all that. It turns out I didn't have to worry about that because by law, my employer couldn't fire me for that. I didn't know that at the time, though, so it was a bit scarier for me. When Steve got out of basic training, I told him my plans and asked him basically to talk me out of it. I knew I basically made up my mind that I wanted to join, but I wanted him to give me all the cons, all the negatives that he could see to me joining. And while he did try his best, gave me all the negatives he could think of, ultimately he failed, and I enlisted in the Connecticut Army National Guard in 2005, late 2005, just a few months after he had finished basic training. It was around that time that he also got orders to go to Iraq. His unit was already there that he had joined. They were already deployed to Iraq, and they were at the tail end of, I believe, an 18-month deployment at that point, and they needed a few extra bodies over there, and so Stephen volunteered to go. According to him, the way that his contract was set up, he didn't have to go overseas since he was going to Norwich University at the time, but he waived that right or ability to not have to deploy and went anyhow. I don't know how true all of that was. Maybe there's more to the story than what I'm saying there, but that's the part of the story that he gave to us anyway. His deployment to Iraq sent him to Ramadi, Iraq, at the end of 2005 and into the early part of 2006. Now, I never went to Ramadi or Iraq, but from what I've read and heard, it wasn't a very friendly place at that time. After Stephen got back, he bought a book called The Sheriff of Ramadi by Dick Couch. It was written about the events that went on in Ramadi around the time that he was there. And Stephen ended up writing a companion segment to that book that he called just simply My Side. When the author of the book, the Sheriff of Ramadi, wrote about certain areas or times or events in Ramadi, Stephen told in his side about the relevant events that he personally experienced in those places or even at those times. I think that action of writing out all that stuff and telling us about these things was somewhat therapeutic for him. But he really didn't like talking about the deployment outside of what he wrote. While he was deployed, I was in basic training, also at Fort Benning, Georgia. I started a couple months after he deployed, and as it turns out, he ended up getting back home just a few days before my graduation. Any Army infantry soldier knows the significance of the blue cord that we receive, but for anyone else, it's essentially a light blue cord that's worn over the shoulder of the dress uniform of infantry soldiers. And you don't get that cord until you finish your training as an infantryman. Since my brother returned early enough, he was able to present me with mine at my graduation, which is something that I'll never forget. I ended up presenting him with his when he graduated basic training, and he reciprocated after the fact by having me or by giving it mine to me, which is definitely something, a memorable event that I'm not going to forget anytime soon. After we all got back home, my brother decided not to return to Norwich University, where he was going. He would be returning into what was called the Corps of Cadets, which basically allowed upperclassmen to have like a higher rank than the lower classes, and he was a part of that. And he realized after being deployed into actual combat that he wouldn't probably want to last too long having some 19 or 20 year old kid boss him around, you know, and that kid never having seen much more than a fist fight, never mind actual combat at that time. And it just, to him, I think, felt like not something he really wanted to be a part of anymore. Not that he had any bad feelings towards Norwich or the Corps of Cadets or anything like that. Just, it seemed like he's already been through the hazing, if you will, of you know, the military training, the combat training and all that other type of stuff. It didn't really seem like it was anything that he really was going to get any more value from, you know, going and having somebody else continuing to you know, yell at him for, you know, not being in the right place at the right time, or, you know, not studying certain things or not doing whatever it is that they do, just did not seem like something he really wanted to be a part of anymore. But not only that, I think that was part of his reason to not want to return to Norwich, but he also wanted to be closer to family. At the time, we lived in Connecticut, which was a little over a three-hour drive to Norwich in good weather. It was way longer if it was snowing or had inclement weather, which was highly likely in the winters of Vermont. When Stephen got back from Iraq and I got out of basic training, we both ended up moving out of our parents' house within, I want to say, maybe a month of us getting back home. And we moved into a condo together. Obviously, we lived together, but we also would do all sorts of things together while we were living in that condo. We drove to Boston on the weekends to watch Boston Bruin hockey games. And some of those trips and the shenanigans that we got into are burned into my memory. Man, we just had such good times together. Stephen ended up transferring college one more time to the University of Hartford after Norwich, and where he eventually graduated with a degree in accounting and with great grades. When he was living with me at the condo, he was late night studying and everything like that, and he was really grinding, and he earned those grades, and he did it the right way. Like he studied, he was focused and determined to graduate with good grades. And shortly after graduating, he started working at a local CPA firm in our hometown. Then fast forward a little bit to 2009, both Stephen and I received orders that we would be deployed to Afghanistan. It turns out that Stephen didn't actually have to deploy since he had just gotten back from Iraq a little while earlier. He was given the option to stay back if he wanted to. And I remember talking to him about this once and being shocked that he essentially volunteered to go. He didn't necessarily have to go. But he told me that he deployed with a lot of the guys already that were in that unit, and a lot of them were going, and he didn't want them going without him. I guess he thought if something bad was to happen, he wanted to be there to help as best he could. I don't know if he would have been able to get by knowing that these guys went overseas and something bad happened and he wasn't there to help. You know, that sort of, what if I was there? What if I could have helped with something? You know, so ultimately he decided that he wanted to go and he wanted to be there so that they didn't have to go without him. By mid-February of 2010, I was in Afghanistan, and his unit followed shortly afterwards. And at that point in time, we had very little contact with each other. The last time I had seen him was at a training base that we were both at the same time in Indiana. The day that I actually left that base, I went into the chow hall and got the last dinner that I ate there, and saw that he and his unit was in the chow hall too, and I grabbed a seat next to him, and we kind of had a dinner together, and got to kind of chat and everything like that. He busted my balls a little bit for some of the crap that I was carrying around with me. You know, it looked like I was going more on a weekend camping trip than going to combat or whatever, and he definitely let me have it for that. But it was in typical fashion. You know, we would joke back and forth with each other, and it was always good-natured. It was always fun and everything. But that's a memory that I have that nobody else really has, you know, in our family, is that having that last meal together with him, you know, before you know, going away to Afghanistan. When we were in Afghanistan, he was on a very remote outpost, and the FOB that I was on wasn't a whole lot better. And we had internet and phone access, you know, we both did, but it wasn't the easiest to get onto. There's, you know, a lot of people on our base, and it wasn't you know, there's usually long lines for these types of things, and it just wasn't easy to get in touch with each other. So we didn't really have much contact with each other when we were actually in Afghanistan. We did, you know, write emails to each other every once in a while when we had the opportunity. But we didn't really talk to each other, you know, once when we got to Afghanistan. Then fast forward a few months, on August 22nd, 2010, as I mentioned earlier, I was on a mission in a remote village when I got the word that my brother was killed. I remember when my commander told me the news, he followed up with asking if I was going to hurt myself, you know, after finding out that kind of devastating news. I was obviously very emotional and very distraught, and you know, that question in and of itself was a very rational question to ask a very emotional man with a gun and a crap load of ammo. So I totally get that type of question. But I remember being disgusted at that question at the time, thinking to myself, how could I hurt myself? I had a wife and a newborn son at home. My parents just lost one son. How could I let them lose both in the same day? And years later, I reflect back on that day and that question specifically, and I realize how easily I could have decided to make a different decision. What if I wasn't married or didn't have a kid? Would the pain of losing my brother, you know, my best friend, have been too much for me? What if I didn't have something or someone to look forward to being with when I got home? Then after I got home, what if I didn't have a good relationship with my wife? What if she didn't think to tell me to get help when she did? What if she kicked me out instead? Where would I be? Would I have attempted to self-medicate, or even worse? Going back now to that question that my commander asked of me, you're not going to hurt yourself, are you? I get it now. I was disgusted at the time thinking of that, and I don't think I ever told him that it was, you know, how that question felt to me when he asked it, but I get it now. And I don't want to mention names on this particular episode, but if you're listening, sir, you know who you are. That had to be one of the hardest messages you had to deliver, and you did it with the utmost respect and professionalism. Never in a million years would I want to be the guy in your shoes at that moment, but you did it without hesitation. I don't think I've ever said this to you directly, but thank you. I know you used to rag on me, and we used to kind of have that kind of relationship where we would go back and forth and everything. But I knew that those kind of jokes would, you know, they came from a place of love. And thank you for being the one to deliver the message the way you did. I remember you trying to comfort me by telling me that you didn't know the circumstances of my brother's death, but you're sure he took a few of the bad guys out with him. And in a kind of sick and twisted way, that was oddly comforting to me. So thank you. There were other friends there who comforted me on that day too. And again, I'm not going to mention any names on this particular episode, but you guys know who you are too. And I want to thank you all for that as well. Anyway, after getting back home, I struggled a bit with everything that had happened with my brother. Eventually, I had to make a decision. Would I be angry the rest of my life with the way way everything happened, about what went on? Or would I honor my brother's sacrifice in his life with the way I lived mine? Now, I decided to choose the latter. I ended up going to the vet center and getting help for some of my issues there. That was one of the best decisions I think I've ever made with regards to my own mental health. It wasn't easy, but it was like a tremendous relief when I finally admitted that there was a problem, like a huge weight being lifted off of my shoulders when I decided that I needed to get help. When I finally said, yes, I need to go and talk to somebody, and I made that appointment, a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders, because I was no longer the person who was carrying 100% of that weight. Now, listen, this is just a small part of the story, a small part of my brother's story, a small part of my story. I don't know, maybe I'll get more into it in another episode. But the moral of this story that I wanted to say to get out to people is that by losing my brother, my best friend, it led me down a path that ultimately led me to understand that you need to have people close to you who care enough about you to tell you when you have a problem and will help you seek out the care that you need. I needed to have someone in my life that I cared about more than myself. I couldn't leave my wife with a newborn to fend for herself. That's not to say that she was incapable. She was perfectly capable of figuring out life on her own, but I could never do that to her. These relationships don't just pop up overnight. So it's important to try to cultivate these relationships before you need them. If you're having trouble with your spouse, get help. Work on your issues. No one said this is going to be an easy ride, but it's a heck of a lot easier going through these things together than it is going it alone. Of the many things I learned from my brother's death, this is one of them that really struck home with me. And I hope that, in a small way, it can help you too. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.